Hey guys, I just wanted to let you know that this podcast is presented by mybookie.ag and that if you use the promo code MATTEK, M-A-T-T-E-K, that you will get a 50% deposit bonus on your first deposit. And given that you are a listener to this podcast, I would assume you're relatively knowledgeable about sports, and I would trust you to try your edge on the online sportsbook. You can lay down some money and get in on the action at one of the safest online sportsbooks in the world. It's the only one that I am currently using. You can wager on all sorts of different outcomes on mybookie.ag, soccer, football, any major league, esports. You can even create your own player props, which is useful for me because if you know anything about me, I do enjoy a good player prop. So if you deposit using the promo code MATTEK, M-A-T-T-E-K, you get a 50% bonus when you deposit. And I will add this for listeners of the TakeCast. If you deposit using the promo code MATTEK and you send proof of it to me on Twitter, I will follow you on Twitter and you can have access to me via DMs whenever you want. That's the TakeCast bonus that I'm adding in association with the mybookie.ag deposit bonus. Now let's get back to the show. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the sensational podcast, The TakeCast. My name is Davis Matic. You can find me on Twitter at Davis Matic. This week's episode is recorded with Drew Dinkmeyer, my buddy, my close personal friend. This is a very interesting episode, I think very near and dear to Drew's heart. We talk about the Welly Maker, which is his big charity organization. If you have a Twitter account, by no doubt you've seen it at this point. Very similar to episode 4, the conversations that Drew and I had about modern living and tribalism and, you know, our digital addictions and, you know, all sorts of things that don't really have much to do with sports. I still think the episode is good. I think most of you will enjoy it. If you do enjoy it, please leave a rating and review on iTunes. The bonus episode for getting to 200 ratings just came out. You guys are pretty close to 300. If you get it to 300, you'll get another bonus episode. So please support me on that. And if you want to support the show, obviously sign up for MyBookie using the promo code. And we'll get into an advertisement now and then get into the interview. Daily Roto is a mostly proud sponsor of the TakeCast, a mostly sports podcast. TakeCast listeners can save 10% at Daily Roto with the promo code JANIS, J-A-N-I-S. If you are playing on DraftKings or FanDuel, Daily Roto will help you improve your daily fantasy results this fall and save time in the process with lineup optimizers, ownership projections, fantasy projections, premium content, and much more. They have all the good stuff that you want to help you make money at sports betting and daily fantasy. Their new lineup optimizer will let you build optimal GPP teams with stacks based on their projections faster than I can punt money off betting on Peter Uihlein. Sure, you can play the guys that I recommend each week, but shouldn't you also get advice from a proven daily fantasy winner like Drew Dinkmeyer? Yes, I do have better hair than Drew, but I also have his cell phone number, and that makes me a winner almost as much as it makes him a winner of the DraftKings Millionaire Maker. And it's not just fantasy. They have tools to bet on player props, golf matchups, and a customizable NFL game simulator for this fall. Head over to dailyrodeo.com/premium and save 10% with promo code JANIS today. All right, guys, we are joined by Drew Dinkmeyer. I'm sorry, man, you're not the first repeat guest. Hermsmeyer beat you. And I should say, well-deservingly, he beat you also. His podcasts are full of actionable information.
Yeah, he's a much better guest than I. I can't really compete with Josh on any level. The only level I can compete with him on is donating to things. And I donated to his research project. So I feel somewhat responsible for bringing Hermsmeyer's research to the front of the Twitter pages.
I didn't donate because he didn't accept crypto.
Wait, because he didn't what?
He didn't accept crypto. So I refuse to give money to anything in non-cryptocurrency. If your project needs Litecoin to fund it, let me know, because I got a giant Litecoin bag I would love to get rid of.
So it's rough out in these streets. You probably don't follow this at all, but everything crypto is just in it's in the total toilet. Everyone's bailing.
So the only way that I follow crypto is via Twitter, and I can tell things are bad because nobody's tweeting about it anymore. That's how I know things have gone bad. Because when things were going good, it was.
I just want everyone to know I still plan to tweet about Bitcoin always.
When's the last time you tweeted about Bitcoin?
Like 3 days ago, because that guy on Hard Knocks was like, I can't find any good investments. There's nothing that makes me any money. And I was like, someone tell that guy to buy Bitcoin. And then Smiz had to come in and be Smiz life and tell everyone to buy land. Like that's an affordable investment for like 97% of people that are on Twitter.
Yeah. No, it's easy. You just go to the local city government and just be like, I just like a little bit of land.
I would
not
like
a lot of land. I only have money for like a very small piece of land.
I would like to buy one sidewalk square for which I will pay annually. So the reason that the Uppity Cast is getting ran back is that the Welly Maker is happening, and you so graciously said, you know, I don't want to do the show again until I have something to promote. So you're coming on to promote this great philanthropical deal you have going on. So I want you to explain what the Welly Maker is, why you decided to do it, and how people can donate and help.
Yeah, so last year we ran the first annual Welly Maker, and we have partnered with Charity Water, which I think is just an incredible organization. And really the organization kind of in this case inspired me to the cause. It was 2006 when I heard Scott Harrison, the CEO of Charity Water, on a podcast with Bill Simmons. And it spoke to me in a way that pretty much no other podcast ever has. He had a background where he was a club promoter. He was doing a lot of things that were helping people around him enjoy and entertain themselves, but he felt a little bit empty inside that he wasn't doing anything to help the world. And that is exactly how I felt in 2006 or in 2016 when, you know, I'm a professional DFS player. I provide content on the DFS side and projections, and it's fun and it's helpful for people who want to enjoy themselves, but it really wasn't doing anything to help the world. I've been blessed by my wife's inspiration to travel that I've been able to see a lot of the world, and I've been able to see stark poverty. And so Charity Water's mission is to create sustainable water solutions, clean water solutions for people all over the globe that don't have access to clean drinking water. And they are an unbelievable, amazing company that 100% of all donations go to water projects. So they have all of their overhead funded by outside donors. Any of the money that you donate to Charity Water or the Welly Maker campaign or anything will go right to water projects. And last year we did this, we kicked it off and we raised $40,000. Which was enough for about 4 fully funded water projects. We got an update on those that they're going to be donated to an area in Mozambique, which is one of the areas in the world that's had the most challenges with access to clean water. And those projects are ongoing now. And the great thing about Charity Water is they continue to update you as the projects go out. So we'll eventually get pictures and GPS locations, and I've gotten some video of some of the work that's being done with the money that was raised last year. And so this year, we're going to do the same thing with the Welly Maker. My idea behind it was that everybody is playing these, you know, big DFS tournaments, the Millionaire Maker, the FanDuel Sunday Million, whatever it is, and they're putting a small dollar amount to try to change their own lives. And during the course of the season, if you took one entry that you would have put into the Welly Maker for the FanDuel Sunday Million and instead donated it to Charity Water through the Welly Maker, you could guarantee changing someone's life. So last year I asked for, you know, donations at any level, but the idea was essentially to replace one entry level into one of those big DFS tournaments. Last year we had a couple incremental areas that I would match. We'll do the same thing this year, but my wife and I have guaranteed that we will match up to the first $40,000 in donations. So last year we raised $40,000. If we can match that this year, we'll raise $80,000 because I myself will be matching $40,000.
What a guy. What a guy, Drew Dinkmeyer.
So it's a project I've gotten passionate about. It's a charity that I've gotten really passionate about. And you'll see me promoting it on Twitter. I'll get you some information, Davis, to drop in the podcast description. But also, essentially, if you go to mycharitywater.org in our charitywater.org and check out Welly Maker 2.0, You can find all of the information about donating to the project.
So all of that will be in the show notes if you guys want to know more. Drew, you know, almost no one in DFS is a good person. That's the big thing. So I will say that in the DFS arena, raising money for something that provides 0% ROI to the person putting the money in, truly astonishing. You will very rarely find a lot of more selfish, financially motivated people than in the DFS world.
I think there's certainly a large percentage of people that would fit that mold, but you would be really surprised. Last year, I was really surprised at how much this movement kind of took over and how much people were inspired to donate. And one of the cool messages that I've heard from Scott Harrison before that he's talked about is the idea that you want to campaign to people and you want to inspire people to do things that they can achieve. Like Nike's, all their marketing goals and all their campaign goals are basically not like, hey, you're fat, you're out of weight, you know, you need us to get you in shape. It's unlock what's within you, you know, just do it, or, you know, whatever their slogans are. It's the idea to inspire, like, everybody has this capacity to give. And I ultimately believe, like, everybody at their core has the ability to give and inspire and give back to people. And a lot of people around the world just don't have the same opportunities that we do kind of growing up in America. I grew up, you know, upper middle class. A lot of people that are listening to this podcast probably grew up the same. Getting access to clean water or education was never a concern. And those are the two things that ultimately, for me, are the things that I'm most passionate about trying to improve around the world. Because if we get everybody in the world that has access to clean water and everybody in the world has access to good education, we'll probably have better people on the whole trying to solve all the world's problems.
I would love even for 80% of people in the United States to even be able to acknowledge how fortunate we are. Like, I just think that, you know, very rarely in public school education that I received did we really even talk about or discuss how awful these situations are in third world countries and how little our country does to do about it. Like, I think for a majority, and then at the very least, like a plurality of Americans, it's literally not something they think about more than once a month.
Yeah, I think most of us just have the scope of who we immediately interact with and we compare ourselves to those who we immediately interact with. So, and you're always going to have people around you that have more access to resources or more wealthy or whatever, and you're going to have people around you that have less. But there's a whole world beyond the people you immediately interact with that have different levels of opportunities and access to resources. And this is one of the most basic things in the world. I mean, if you don't have clean water to drink, you can't stay healthy. And if you can't stay healthy and if you don't have a meaningful lifespan, then it's harder to make big impacts on the world. And so, you know, these areas, most of them are like rural areas in Africa, India, that just don't have access to clean water. They're drinking really dirty, contaminated water as their normal drinking water. They're having to make decisions on whether they're able to bathe their children or themselves or cook a meal with the limited water supply they have. Like, those are decisions that we never have come up in my life in any way, shape, or form. I mean, I drink from like double filtered water. I have like my whole house is filtered water. Like, it's ridiculous the level of like unbelievable water that I have access to. And so yeah, it would be great if more people thought a little bit further outside of their immediate interactions.
More philosophically, not even so much about your charity in general, about this drive, but where do you come down on the idea that true altruism doesn't even actually exist? Like how good do you feel with all the ats that you get during the Welly Maker? Like, how good does anyone feel? You know, like do you think that if this was not taking place on Twitter and that people couldn't tweet at you like, hey, I donated to your thing, do you think that the money coming in would be a lot slower?
So if you can't spread the word, obviously the money coming in will be a lot slower.
Sure.
But in terms of like true altruism, I think a lot of internal happiness can be found by your ability to kind of lift up others around you. And so in this regard, for me, like being able to spread awareness and leverage the platform that I have, there is a lot of inherent happiness that is derived from being able to try to help others and to try to make a difference. And the thing that I like about Charity Water compared to some of the other charities out there is that when I donate to Charity Water, I get feedback back from them throughout the project on how things are going. So I feel inspired and I feel like rewarded because I'm seeing the impact that it's making. If I donate to, you know, the local Red Cross or, you know, the Salvation Army or whatever, I don't see the results of that donation. And I feel good when I'm making the donation, but I don't get kind of tapped down the road to say, hey, like, this is what happened. This is how you change someone's life. And so I think, you know, those are natural benefits that come from, you know, being charitable. And I think they're, you know, whether they're truly altruistic or whether there's like hidden motivation inside each human being to get positive feedback loops, I don't think it really matters at the end of the day. It does inspire me and it does like help me to keep going. But like, I don't know, I get a lot of ads that are also horrible too. Like during this campaign, like people that are like, oh, you just do this for a tax write-off, or oh, you're, you know, you don't, why don't you donate to this project here at home?
Sure. Or, yeah.
So, I mean, like, you're never going to make everybody happy, but at the end of the day, if you feel like you're making a difference, it can make a big difference in the way you just, you know, carry yourself and the perspective you have.
I actually do not like when charities follow up with me because I know that I am a glory hog. Like, I just know that about myself. I bask in the ats. I just love positive recognition. So I just, like, I will only say that, like, the two things I donate to are the ACLU and End Violence Against Women International. But I don't want these companies sending me things. I don't want them to tell me how such and such went. Like, I know that they do good things, and I know the more like into it I get, the more I'll be like, yeah, I did that. Yeah, I made sure that this person didn't go to jail, or I like this or that or the other. And like, so I like, just because I am very aware of that about myself, I want to give the money away and then I want to forget that it happened, because if not, it'll become like a selfish, not as good thing.
That's interesting. So I don't think of these things. I mean, I always think of these things in the fact that like the charity is the one that's doing incredible work. Like, you know, I'm just helping.
Well, you're a more well-adjusted person than I am.
I'm just helping leverage a platform. Like, the people at Charity Water are the ones doing the amazing work in the world and in the fields, and they're working with local partners to build all the wells and everything. And same thing for, like, you know, the ACLU, all the lawyers that they have kind of doing all the work that they're doing for civil liberties. Like, those people are the ones doing the really incredible work. And I hope there's a part of my life that I get into that nonprofit side, where I'm doing a little bit more hands-on of the work itself, because I think it's really fulfilling.
Well, you know, it is hard. It is hard to do the dirty work for the nonprofits when you're like really having to think about whether or not Nikola Jokic is going to get 40 or 44 DraftKings points against the Minnesota Timberwolves. It's difficult to do both.
Yeah, it is. Ultimately, I think I'll get there, but, you know, we'll see. We'll see what the DFS path brings me.
It's so interesting working in daily fantasy and being so obsessed with it. It's just, I feel like there's just a tinge of hypocrisy in everything I do outside of DFS, because I think DFS is like honest to God, like the most selfish thing I've ever done in my life. Like, it's just about acquiring more wealth. Like, providing content is about acquiring more wealth. My lineups are all about acquiring more wealth and taking it from someone else.
Yeah. And that's a lot of what struck me when I heard Scott Harrison's episode with Bill Simmons, that he felt the same way with a lot of the things that he was doing. I think there will be times that I will try to convince myself that I'm doing things that I think help others, in terms of like, I'm helping others provide entertainment or get away from their day and different things with the content and the projections and different things that I provide. But, you know, ultimately, what I'm doing is I'm helping people try to improve their own wealth or take their own wealth. And ultimately, it's a zero-sum game. So someone else is losing wealth in that interaction. So it is a little bit of a struggle and a little bit of an inconsistency from kind of what I'm trying to do to better the world on the whole.
People contain multitudes. Everyone's shades of gray.
Yes. I would love if people, like, I know you were saying you would love if people could recognize that, you know, the circumstances that they have compared to the rest of the world in different situations. I would love if people could understand the multitudes in a different facets of people, that you can like one aspect of a person and not like other aspects of a person. And that's okay. You don't have to like hate everything about a person or love everything and worship everything about a person. And it's okay for people to have different facets that you agree or disagree with.
All right, lighter subject. You just will not shut up about this show Explained on Netflix. You've texted me about it. You tweet about every episode that comes out on Netflix. So I want you to shill for the show for a little bit. But then also, I think there's like a larger discussion to be had about education and about the way people learn and engage with information.
And that's really at the root of why I think the show has resonated with me so strongly, is the show's a Netflix docuseries called Explained, and they take random topics, like really random topics. The range of topics has been like Korean pop music, tattoos, weed, the stock market. The most recent one was on lifespan. There's been one on designer DNA. And they're like 15 to 18 minute episodes that are documentaries about that subject and kind of what's going on in the research, or like how the history of like tattoos came to be and how different tattoos have different origin stories, essentially, like where they come from culture wise. And I think the stuff is really cool and fascinating, but the fact that it's just 15 to 18 minutes, I stay locked in the whole time. And there's not a lot of content that I consume anymore that I am locked in for the entirety of the content consumption process. Like if I put on a Netflix comedy, a stand-up comedy routine, I'm like, I have it on the background, in the background while I'm working or something. And there might be like a joke or a couple jokes that like grab my attention. And I look up and I'm like focused. But during the course of that hour, hour and 15 stand up, like I'm probably locked in for like 10 to 12 minutes. And that's how I feel with a lot of the shows I watch as well. So this 15 to 18 minute like ability to consume has me focused, because I know there's an endpoint coming and it's coming at a reasonable time. So I'm kind of locked into the show the whole time. And I find learning about the different topics really interesting, because I find out a lot about something that I didn't know much about. Like I didn't know much about tattoos. I didn't know much about weed. That's not been my life. So like understanding more about different things I find fascinating.
Well, I haven't been in a classroom in a long time, like three or four years, something like that. You know, 40, 50 years for you, probably, yeah, something like
yeah.
that.
Yeah.
But I can only imagine, you know, as my brain has gotten more damaged by all the screens, as I've become even more stunted and attention span limited due to all of this, I can truly only imagine how boring it has got to be in a classroom right now. Like, can you imagine sitting through a PowerPoint lecture about biology for an hour?
No, I can't right now. I mean,
they didn't even have PowerPoint when you were in school, huh?
we had chalkboards. yeah, I can't. It's a struggle for me. Even content that I really like there was Andrew Wiggins recommended this Investor Field Guide pod yesterday with this Boyd Vardy dude who's like a South African tracker and talks a lot about how his life has been so strongly influenced by the land and by animals and different things. And I'm sitting there listening to this podcast and I'm like, this is fascinating. And then I recommend the podcast to a bunch of people. And then like later that night, I'm trying to think back about what specifically I loved about that podcast. And I'm like, oh man, I'm not retaining a ton. And it's because I don't sit there in like a completely walled off area listening to something. I have like Slack open, or I have GChat open, or I have Twitter open, and I'm reading other things while I'm listening. And so it's all this distracted educational process. And I can't imagine the challenges that teachers face these days trying to communicate to students who have that as like a natural part of their daily routine now.
I mean, how outdated really though is like the model? Like school has been the same for 150 years, more or less. You go to a room with other people your age and you, some information gets disseminated to you, and in some way you're expected to repeat or regurgitate or summarize that information at a later date.
Yeah, I think the thing that I kind of realized as I got further along in my education was that the best teachers are ultimately the ones who aren't thinking about getting you the information in a way that you just have to kind of regurgitate it back out. They're ones that are trying to find creative ways for you to connect with the information. And you know, they're ones that might like do things where they set up like skits or sketches where you try to put yourself in the place if it's like a history class or something like that. So you have some other memory that you can connect to outside of just trying to memorize stuff to pass a test. And that's basically what my education process was most of my life. I was just trying to memorize stuff to pass a test, and then stuff goes away because you don't have any like anything to kind of latch onto when you're trying to remember the education you had. So it seems like a broken model. I don't know a ton about what advancements they've tried in terms of the U.S. education system, and I'm really far out from the last time I was in a classroom. But that model seems extremely vulnerable in this day and age when attention spans have shortened so substantially.
My guess would be that at, you know, really nice private schools, education is a lot different. This is my guess. But my guess, Drew, is that if you went to Dartmouth right now and you went into whatever class, it would not be recognizable to what you did when you were there. It would be a lot different. Whereas if I went back to K-State and walked into a class, I'd be like, oh, this is just a class. Like, this is just a class where someone's getting taught. And the teacher could be good and the students could be engaged, but it's not going to look much different.
Yeah, I can say that things felt that way to me when I was in school, and I would visit my friends at other state universities, and I would see their classrooms or their curriculum or different things. It was just very standardized. It was meant to try to feed a class of like 150 people, and there wasn't opportunities to like have back and forth and to try to improve at least the entry level classes like statistics and different things like that. Whereas like most of my classes at Dartmouth, most of them had like 20 people in them. So there was like a lot of, you know, ability to go back and forth with professors on stuff.
Well, that was my experience too, but that's not what I meant. I more meant in the sense of how the information is being disseminated. Like, I bet there's a lot more screen time. There's like going to be like probably kids have iPads, like university distributed iPads. There's going to be like videos. There's like no paper quizzes, like everything would be on a screen would be my guess. Whereas like, you know, the public high school that I went to, it's not getting screens in it for 40 years.
Yeah.
Like they're just too broke. And like, this is like something that I have not heard discussed very much, but this gap of like haves and have nots is going to get even wider, the more expensive schools get, and the like, you know, the farther the public schools are going to fall behind.
So I think that's the biggest challenge going forward, is kind of that wealth gap and how that equates to so many different substantial disadvantages to people, that whether it's on the education side, whether it's on the health side. Like I've done a ton with my own health in the last year, and it's really expensive to like constantly get blood work done and get, you know, genetic testing and different things. And this is stuff that most people just wouldn't have the ability to afford by any means. And so like every level of society, as the wealth gap separates, you're going to create more and more disadvantage between people. And I think education is probably the one, I don't know, because people have such strong negative opinions about Betsy DeVos and like her being at the Secretary of Education. I think it's coming to the forefront a little bit more, but the lack of investment in the space just seems like that's going to be the biggest kind of driver in separating countries in the future. Like if you look at like the countries that have invested tons in education over the last two decades, like China and whatnot, the average education of their population is just so much stronger. Eventually, the world powers are going to turn based on how much you're investing in education.
Yeah, it's true. And like, I don't know, it's easy to say like the average American is an idiot, but like the average, you know, English person probably is an idiot too. Like it's hard for me to say. Like, I do think part of this is just there's so many people on the earth that it's just going to seem like there's a lot more idiots, like a lot of more dumb people.
Well, also, reproduction rates, like this is like the whole plot to Idiocracy. Reproduction rates at like the lower education levels tend to be higher because they don't have access to birth control and different things like that. And so as a result, you just tend to have more people populating at kind of lower, you know, the lower levels of where society is like taking care of them. So like the lower income levels, the lower education levels tend to have population rates that are a little bit higher than the higher education levels. And so like, and a lot of my friends are in their mid 30s with like no kids and have like really high education levels. And a lot of them are like, yeah, I don't know that we have the money to be able to do this long-term. And these are people that are very wealthy. Like, I don't know if I have the money to have like multiple kids and have them grow up the way that I want them to grow up with private
right.
schools and different things like that. So it becomes like a disadvantage where the population is growing in different ways as well.
The corporations love it though. More poor farm, you know, there it's just like more poor people to herd into the factories and pay less. You know, it's amazing. Yeah, I mean, amazing. Because those people have some earning power that all funnels upward.
Until automation removes the necessity for those people. And then what happens? I don't know. Like once all those...
The Great War, man. It's coming. Yeah.
Like once factory jobs and whatnot are like totally removed because automation has like totally eliminated them, then you've got like a whole segment of the population that is basically born poor, born with no access to education, and born with no upward mobility.
Yeah, then what do? Then you brace for the revolt.
Then the really rich people try to find another planet to migrate to. Which is what like Bezos and Elon and whatnot are trying to figure out now.
What absolute evil husks of human beings those guys are.
Like, how do we get the rich people to all like be able to find another planet that we can try again on?
Yeah, how do they all get to Mars?
Yeah.
I hope they get there. I hope I get to come with them. I hope I get to be...
Probably not.
I hope I get to come as like the court jester. I'll make an episode of the Take Cast with one of you idiots every day. That's my pitch. That's my pitch to get to the space shuttle. What would be your pitch to get on the shuttle? I offer something of tangible value.
Yeah, I don't think I have anything.
They'd get so bored up there without podcasts.
Yeah, I don't think I got anything that would keep them entertained, and I don't think my worldview would necessarily coincide with theirs. So
well, mine wouldn't either, but I'm a survivor, so I could change my worldview if I needed to.
I'm definitely like, you know, you have fight or flight instincts. I am flight.
Yeah, see, I'm the exact opposite way. I'm definitely fight.
Yeah, I'm going down quickly, and like the revolution, I'm gonna be one of the first people dead.
I'll be on the space shuttle. I won't be on the front line of the revolution because I will survive the revolution, so I will be somewhere, you know, stockaded. I will be finding a way to survive. Speaking of the revolution, just had Denny Carter on an episode. We didn't talk very much football. It was mostly a politics podcast. Surprisingly, no mega idiots have added me yet, though I'm expecting it. You know, once they get to it, you know, they'll find me. Hey everyone, I wanted to take a minute to tell you about Apex Fantasy Leagues, the best place to play online season-long fantasy football for money. There is a skill-based format where you play two games per week, and there's industry-leading payouts where Apex actually adds money to the payout pool. They really ensure that the best fantasy players get the good return on their investment. Apex hosts 12-team PPR leagues that provide a variety of drafting options, live or email, snake draft or auction. You also have the flexibility to sign up for a league just hours before the draft. On top of that, Apex pretty often puts extra money from their profits into the prize pool to make sure that leagues get filled. Apex also offers dynasty leagues in a variety of formats. And finally, Apex is the place to play if you want to win big money in a format that mitigates randomness. Not only does Apex have the highest payouts in the whole industry on a percentage basis, but it also features both blind bidding, free agent acquisition budgets, so that all free agent acquisitions are fair, and two matchups per week, one versus a head-to-head opponent and the other versus the league average, so that, you know, you don't get screwed when your opponent has the most points and you have the second most points. You're still going to come out of that week with a win. You can compete every week without worrying about arbitrary strength of schedule. Give it a try. I promise you will love it. Go to apexfantasyleagues.com today and sign up. And now let's get back to the show. So where are you at on the hope meter right now for all of this? Just the deeply systemic, you know, disingenuous bullshit. Where are you at?
I'm pretty close to hopeless, I would say. I'm now the person that when I like get together with my friends, who most of my friends kind of live around the country. So when we get together, I haven't seen them in a long time. And usually when like we're talking about stuff, or I'm the one now who's like Eeyore. I'm the one who's like, yeah, I spend a lot of time thinking about humanity's paths out of this kind of whirlwind that we're marching towards, and I don't see paths now. So I'm pretty like long-term hopeless for humanity, which is sad. I want to be hopeful and I want to be optimistic. And, the things that help me do that are, you know, is like, you know, the Welly Maker Project and different things like that. But ultimately we just have a world right now where people who have a lot of access to resources, are hoarding them. And they're not trying to share those resources to be able to help people grow as a whole. And if you don't do that, I don't know how you get out of the path of trying to solve all these things. If everybody can only think of their immediate selves and like their family as the most important things and only take care of that, we have too much accelerating wealth gap, too many different problems going around the world to like get out of that kind of march towards the death of humanity, essentially. So I'm really hopeless.
If you want to feel better about it, every other time in human history where the rich have hoarded too much stuff, they've all ended up dead.
Yeah. So, I mean, we're eventually going to
I was actually not joking about the revolution.
Yeah.
Something that's now in play.
I'm not either. I think it's likely going to happen. I mean, what's happening right now around the world is nationalism is spreading really strongly. And what happens there is usually when you get nationalism spreading really strongly, you get all sorts of atrocities with like local genocides, or you get mass world war. And the concern now with mass world war is simply that the weapons we have are so much stronger than the weapons we've had before in terms of the ability and the power of nuclear weapons. So I think if you head in that direction, you face really, really big problems with potential nuclear war. But if you head in the other direction where that gets like cut off, is with lots of little revolutions kind of around the world and people rising up to try to overthrow governments and stuff. And that's just a really messy situation as well. So I don't know. I believe that a revolution will eventually happen because people are going to be forced to the brink. I mean, you look at, there was this article I read a few months ago about how the US is establishing a whole new level of poverty, in that basically it's not poverty in the sense that people are poor. It's not poverty in the sense that people don't have access to drinking water or vaccines or different things that'll keep them healthy. It's poverty in the sense that everybody or a high percentage of the population is walking around and they're one misstep away from being unable to recover ever again, mm-hmm. because the systems are not set up to help them, whether it's, you know, stuff with like mental health that people aren't set up to recover from, whether it's stuff with like the criminal justice system, where basically like if you screw up at a young age and you get thrown into the criminal justice system, it's extremely difficult to get yourself out. And then, or simple things like healthcare, like right now, like the head of GoFundMe talking about how like, you know, a huge percentage of the GoFundMe projects right now are just for healthcare related, just people asking
cancer.
Yeah. Just people needing money to be able to treat themselves when we have the medicine around. So it's like this weird thing where we're creating this level of poverty where nobody has the ability, like the only people that have the ability to save are the people who have generational wealth that's being passed down to them. And so as a result, you've got people just living on the brink of disaster all of the time. And that pressure that is put on you from a mental perspective is extremely taxing. And that carries through to society because it creates a bunch of people who are individually more interested in hoarding, because if they don't, they face potential imminent personal disaster if they don't hoard. So like it's a super, super risky setup for, you know, for the population. And the US is like doing this thing because the wealth gaps are accelerating, housing's becoming more expensive, healthcare is becoming way more expensive, that people can't, and wages aren't increasing. So people can't make enough money to keep up with the rising cost of just being
alive.
Human being.
Yeah. I mean, like what I would say is definitively good money for someone my age. Like I make the most money out of everyone I know. In terms of like the guys who I'm friends with, like these are all people with careers and like I've just gotten lucky to make good money. And I'm in like, if I got cancer, bankrupt, like, you know, if something bad happened to me, like I feel like very well off considering my circumstances growing up. But if something bad happened to me, that'd be it. There'd be like that one thing.
And because the cost of healthcare is so high, people don't often go to see doctors. So things don't get caught early because there's no incentive to be preventative in that measure because it's so expensive to do so. So you've just got the system set up that people are just kind of living on the brink. And that's when everybody's kind of living on the brink and tensions are rising kind of from the ground up, that's kind of the backdrop or atmosphere that would be conducive to a revolution.
I'm here for it.
I'm not. I'm just going to be hiding in my house while all hell is breaking.
They're probably coming for you, man.
I know. I'm the person they're coming for, even though I'm trying to help. I mean, not really. I'm trying to help monetarily.
Sure.
I'm not, like, actually out actively in the streets, like, trying to help. I'd like to get there.
Well, the Republicans have done this really great thing where they've just convinced this giant mass of poor people that actually what's best for them is for the rich people to keep the money. It's like amazing.
So I think the amazing thing that politicians have done is they've really mobilized whatever their bases are in the idea that the other base is bad. No matter what. Mm-hmm. So instead of people voting in their best interests, instead of people thinking of problems in a way, in a framework of like, oh, this would be better for me. This is how I'd like to, raise my vote. People have the framework of, well, what affiliation is that person? And if that person's my affiliation, then I agree with them. If they're not my affiliation, I disagree with them. And that toxic level of reactions towards policy creates it so that, hey, policy doesn't matter, right? All that matters is what part of a tribe you are and who's winning the tribe game. And so all these rich people, like most politicians, are very, very wealthy. All these politicians on both sides have set up a structure that they can continue to benefit wealth-wise, and nobody challenges them because they just set up their bases and they don't try to speak to the other base in any way, shape, or form. And it's extremely destructive. And I think you're seeing the results of it over time. And this has been sowed for years and years and years, it seems, where the conversation has flipped away from what are the things that we can best do to move civilization forward. And the conversation has flipped to what are the best things I can do to make my tribe move forward, whether I'm Democrat or Republican or whatnot. And that's not going to be a way to solve any of these problems long-term.
No. And I don't mean to say obviously I'm a Democrat and in general, I vote Democrat, but like if the socialists were like a legit third party that was like more organized and stuff, I would probably vote that way because I actually think centrism is like in general, not great. And really the Democrats for the last 15 years have really just been a more watered down version of a lot of Republican policies. Like Obama had a couple things that were much more left-leaning, like obviously the healthcare thing. Yeah. But if you look at like what Obama and the Democratic Congress those 8 years did, like there was still a lot of like war hawking stuff and like not really sweeping changes. Like life was not changing for the average American with the Democrats in power over those 8 years. So when I criticize the Republicans, I don't want it to make it sound like, oh, clearly these idiot Democrats that couldn't defeat Donald Trump in an election, these are great, smart people who have things figured out. They can't even figure out, a good presidential candidate to run when they have all this time to think about it.
So the other thing that I would say there is that I think, because you mentioned like socialist left, and people will immediately have such a negative reaction to socialism because we've all been trained through years of like public education and whatnot. Capitalism good.
Yeah, socialism who do you think set those policies for you to learn about how bad socialism and communism were when you were 10?
So capitalism good, socialism bad. That is the framework we are always taught from. So the idea that there could be any parts of socialism that could be good, or there could be any parts of capitalism that could be bad, is very foreign to people.
I mean, you know those Nordic states that people always talk about how socialism, really outside of like the healthcare and the school system, all of that being, centralized in government, like there's a lot of capitalism involved in all societies.
Yeah,
and it works great.
And I think that's ultimately the type of society that probably will work best going forward is elements of both, because you just have these challenges ahead of you with automation and different things that are going to narrow the job pool in general as the population pool keeps growing. So I feel like, but people are so programmed, like there's so much messaging that you're taking in subconsciously from a really young age that shapes your framework on things. And I noticed this from my perspective because I grew up with, I would say one side of my family is very Republican leaning, and I think the other side of my family is more liberal leaning, but not super political, at least when I was growing up. So I had more exposure to the conservative side of my family. And there were so many words or phrases that, like, I was taught at a young age that, like, I didn't think twice about until, like, I got older and I kind of thought through, oh, well, that's bad messaging that I've had my whole life, where I just reacted to the word instead of thinking about the problem. Like, I remember a bunch of people, like, from a young age being told, like, estate tax, double taxation, like, immediately. And so that was my immediate response to everything. I never, like, thought through the problem of people being able to carry over generational wealth and keep moving down. And
yeah, you want to have good schools, you want to have good roads, live in a place that has state income tax.
Yeah, and then you hear, like, and then you'll hear people who, like, any social benefit is welfare, right? Like, that's the messaging alongside it. And welfare in this country is for poor people who don't work hard. That's what people think of when they think of welfare. They don't think of it in the sense of, like, providing opportunities for people to live their best life or to like get themselves out of a troubling situation.
Or how about the fact that we live in the richest country on earth and just, like, if your grandmother falls and breaks her hip, she shouldn't die alone in a shitty nursing home?
Yeah. So, like, we have all this bad messaging from a young age, and I feel like that's the same thing with socialism and capitalism. And so I think the establishment politicians are doing a very good job leveraging the fear of the population of socialism. In general, like, they label anybody that's pretty far.
I mean,
on the left.
They're doing it with this gal Ocasio-Cortez, yeah. Who's like, yeah. What she's like a, you know, this very small district in New York, yeah. Right? Yeah. Like, I mean, what, maybe 200,000 people? I don't even actually know. Like, yeah. This woman doesn't matter. She will not change a single thing. Her policy will not influence hardly anyone. But
it's the spread of her ideas that people,
yeah,
are afraid of.
But we have Republican politicians from, you know, basically from Trump down, from the literal president, you know, talking bad about this this woman
reason. I think one of the funniest things about how she's been portrayed is the idea that people are like, oh, she's so dumb, she doesn't know anything about policy. And she's had some bad moments in terms of being in front of the media. But these are a lot of the people who are saying, like, oh, she's so dumb, she doesn't know anything about policy, you shouldn't listen to her.
Also don't know anything about policy.
Voted for Donald Trump. Or, yeah. like clearly who doesn't pay attention.
That's not why they're voting.
Actively, like, says, I don't want to read briefings and whatnot. Like, show me pictures, basically. So, like, people just are going to judge the woman.
No, but Drew, that's the fake news media. That's that, right. that reporting that's not real. Donald Trump knows all the time zones.
So the, you know, and people also like to, like, historically like to talk down to women. That's another thing that happens in our culture quite a bit because of all the messaging we've received at a young age that, you know, women are meant to be not heard from, essentially. And so I find it interesting to watch people who I think are pretty, like, I don't know, pretty well adjusted, and, like, they look at her and they're like, oh, she's so dumb, she doesn't know every little policy level, and they don't think that about, you know, anyone on their team or whatever. And this is the matter of the fact with politicians is it is impossible for them to know everything about everything. Like, that is a stupid expectation to hold anybody to. They have staffers who can,
they have, like, 500 staffers.
Yeah, that help be specialists in certain areas so that they can help them, and then they're supposed to leverage the will of the people in their own districts to make decisions, but none of that happens. But the way that people are trying to quickly shut down the new ideas because it's being defined or messaged as socialism, as opposed to, like, perhaps aspects of socialism that might be useful in our current environment, because people are so afraid of, like, the spread of socialism. Everybody references Venezuela. Nope, like, most, and then most people on the left will
Bitcoin huge in Venezuela. Countries.
Yeah. So I don't know. I just think it's interesting how, like, messaging from a really young age shapes the way you react immediately to different words and different wordings, and how we, like, immediately react to people. And there's stuff with race relations that is relative to this as well. Like, from a very young age, you're taught black evil, white good, and, like, all the cartoons you watch, the person dressed.
It's so coded that if you told someone that just on the street, they'd be like, "Well, that's not true. No one once was ever racist around me."
Yeah,
but it's
subconscious stuff. Yeah. And that's the other thing about the discussion around racism that's been hijacked completely is, like, the idea of if you're racist is you know, do you actively hate people from a different race? It's not, are you supporting systems that subconsciously keep people down or don't give people the same types of opportunities?
And that, I mean, the answer is yes.
Yeah, that whole discussion has been hijacked as well, so that the people who are reacting to, I'm not a racist, or I don't think that way, they're thinking of, I don't actively hate this person. They're not thinking of like, oh yeah, I support all these policies that make it so that they never have an opportunity out of low-income areas or different things like that.
Everyone, you need to vote. You need to vote. This November, it's actually huge. Like, it's like I voted in the primaries this year, and I like never go vote in the like local primaries. I normally don't go vote, but this year I did because I was just like, it's everything going on right now. It's too important. Like, you gotta go vote.
Yeah, I think there's, and I think a lot of, that was the same momentum for people who wanted Trump elected, is that they felt like we need to go out and vote. What's happening is very dangerous, and we need to get away from establishment politicians. And I think there's something correct in that
part of the mindset. Yes. Totally.
I think there's a lot of other things that those people were willing to overlook that I don't personally agree with, and I would not be willing to overlook. But I think that mindset is correct, and I think the system does need to change. So yeah, I've been more active in voting as well, but I was never a person, I was never political. The first, the first election I ever voted in was last election. I just didn't care before, but I was also privileged.
That's gross, man.
I was super privileged. I didn't have the need to care. The policies didn't feel like they were affecting me personally. And that's a super like privileged, arrogant way to think.
Well, it's true.
In some respects,
it's true that a lot of those policies did not have a giant impact on you in your life.
Yeah, very true.
To me, it's more of like if everyone voted, if truly everyone 18 and older voted, like a lot of these problems we have now would not exist. You would just not have this sentiment that these people in Washington were out to get you. I just feel like as if everyone was an active participant in the political process and had been for the entirety of, you know, the last 50 years, I just think things would look different.
Well,
I think things
would be healthy. You'd have a wider pool of applicants that we would be choosing from, which is always a good thing.
Yeah, it tilts me that my options are to vote for this white Christian guy or this white Christian guy.
So you'd have a wider pool of applicants. You'd also have a younger population base within the people who are making decisions, which is another thing. Those people are incentivized totally differently from you or I. Like a 65, 70 year old person making decisions has a totally different incentivization than we do. They're only going to be on this earth for 30 to 50 more years, right? So they don't have to think long term. They are just making decisions about what can set them up in their best way immediately. Whereas people who are, you know, 25 to 35 have to potentially live on this earth for like 90 more years. So those people have much more incentive to try to fix things long term. And so, you know, things, whether, you know, climate change or whatever, like you would have more policies directed towards potentially trying to fix long term problems because those people have to live in that world that they've created.
Yeah, I mean, and just in general, having old people in charge is probably not like the sharpest thing anyways. Like those aren't people who are having new ideas. Those aren't people who are functioning at like even top mental capacity.
The people who have never experienced, like don't know how to like, and we can joke about me being one of these old people because I don't know how to like text message from my computer because I don't have an Apple. But like the people who like don't know how to operate like iPads and or their phone or whatnot are the people who are going to solve like the challenges of technological automation. Come on.
Like we're big on cyber here.
They're not going to, or like figuring out cybersecurity measures that need to be in place. Like these aren't the people who like are going to have the best handle on this stuff. So why are we choosing these people to like run everything? It's because we have a really small pool of applicants to choose from, and it's usually establishment. Like there's that Eddie Murphy movie that I forget the name of now, where he basically runs on the same name of the previous politician that died, and he gets elected without ever like showing his face in campaigns or anything because people just recognize the name. And that's a lot of voting establishment as well.
Some guy in Kansas, there was like the attorney general or something was running unopposed, and some guy in Kansas was like, well, that's not right. So guy with the same name runs. So there was two guys named like Ken something on the ballot.
Distinguished, funny. Distinguished Gentleman, I believe, is the Eddie Murphy movie that I'm now remembering.
There you go.
Great. Very, very old, way before your time, Davis.
Great. Yeah. I'm not gonna watch it. Not gonna watch Distinguished Gentlemen. So since the last time we talked, have you done anything about engaging or unplugging from the digital nightmare more?
No, and it's bad. The only time that I'm able to do it is when I like go on vacation. And when I go on vacation, like my wife will get me to do meditation and different things. And I feel so much better. I feel so much more unbelievably like sharp and focused and awake and not tired. And for me, these are huge challenges for me upcoming with football season and basketball season when the two overlap. My schedule just gets crazy and I basically like never leave the house for like 4 months. And so it's frustrating for me. Like when I look back and I didn't take advantage of this summer when I kind of had more downtime to kind of reestablish some practices in my own life that would help my mental health and help my focus and help my attention span.
Meditation is huge. It's like you have like people I think would kind of dismiss it out of hand if they have no experience from it. Like, oh, what is just sitting there and not looking at anything do for you? But like it'll change your whole outlook. It'll change your whole vibe that you have going on inside your brain.
It takes a while to get used to.
Yeah.
Because when you're doing it at first, you just don't know if you're doing it right. So you're like constantly in your head, like, is this the way it's supposed to be? And like, really you're trying to shut your mind off and you're trying to like let ideas come in and then you like push them aside and say, okay, I'll deal with that idea later. And you're trying to like just feel and connect it to your body and your mind essentially through a process of slowing everything down, slowing your breathing. And when I do it, I feel better afterwards, but still in the midst of it, I feel self-conscious that I might not be doing it right. And so I've probably still done it like less than 10 times in total. But it's something that after I do it and I like sit up or stand up or whatever, I feel much more mentally clear and I feel much more like energized. So I see the immediate benefits of it, but I still, you know, personally haven't been able to detach at all.
I've not been doing great. I've been doing like before bed, just not bringing the phone into bed at all, and just bringing a book or something instead. But still, it's in general, it's miserable.
The things that Denny talked about in the last podcast about not being able to sit there and read things that are like long scale pieces on the internet and whatnot, mm-hmm. I felt extremely connected to. Like there's stuff that I'm interested in.
You just have the pull. You just have the pull in the back of your head. It's always pulling you.
Unbelievable.
Away. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's the same thing if I sit down with a book, even a book that I'm interested in that I like. I have the feel like, what's going on? What am I missing? And it's very difficult. I feel like for me, a lot of this stuff is influenced negatively by, honestly, by like my DFS participation.
Oh yeah. Like
I feel like I need to be around to catch news, to update projections, to do those things. So I feel constantly like pulled back in.
Even like checking scores. Like last night I was refreshing the Packers Steelers preseason game log on my phone, like every 5 minutes. Like there's no reason for that. Like there's like your lineups are locked. Like just let it go. And I don't need to be like watching every preseason snap for Jake Kumerow to like, you know, really figure out things for my drafts this year. Like it's just not necessary, but I was doing it anyway.
Yeah.
What can you do?
I mean, you have to try to set habits, and I mean, I'm guilty of this. I haven't been able to do it, but I need to try to set habits to get myself in like present in the moment of each thing that I'm doing. Like, I think that's one of the negatives of like our society, like promoting multitasking, like, and I like to think of myself as a very good multitasker, but ultimately like what you're doing is you're spreading your attention span thinner and thinner. Mm-hmm. And ultimately what like I think the most impactful stuff will be trying to be present in whatever you're doing.
And it makes me feel unproductive to do just one thing too.
Mm-hmm. Cause you feel the guilt, you feel the weight of society and expectations on you that like you should be accomplishing more.
It's horrible. Everyone, you know, drink a lot of water, sleep 8 hours a night, and, you know, just like send your mom a text message or something.
Yeah. Don't be so excited to rise and grind like Denny would.
I like during football season, it's bad. I spread myself super thin. I'm doing like 9 things at once.
I feel that.
It's horrible. Like before I was podcasting with you, I was on hold with a company, paying my other bills online, playing a game of Madden, and texting you at the same time.
Yeah.
Like that's like the none of that. Like I could have just done one of those things at a time and everything would have been okay.
That's me. Like I'm excited to listen to a really good podcast. I put it on in the background and then I look at like what I'm doing while I'm listening to that podcast. I'm like answering questions in Slack. I'm updating projections. I'm working on NFL baseline projections. And then I like listen to the podcast at the end and I'm like, I got like 5 minutes of that I like really like honed in on and remembered.
Drew, you need a dog, man.
I think I need a kid that like will like, you know, have my attention out on like, I think you get optimism in children. Like if you're around children, like when I'm around.
What if
like,
your kid's a dick though?
Well, I mean, that would take a few years to figure out. Like, true. So like the first few years I'd still like, I'd have the opportunity to change. But when I'm around like my friend's kids, like when I'm around like Micah for Leonie, like I'm so happy. I'm just like, sure. I get lost in their world. And same thing when I'm around like my nephew, I'm like as happy as I could possibly be because they like you can't take your focus off them because if you do, they'll start running themselves into trouble.
Yeah, they'll probably be dead.
So like you are just totally focused on them at the whole time. The rest of the world means nothing. And so like I feel like for optimism purposes in my optimistic level towards humanity, I probably need a kid.
I think that's a good way to end. Megan, if you're listening, and I hope you are. I hope you heard that. Drew from dailyrodeo.com. You want to
tell me so much for the Daily Rodeo. It tells me so much. I actually have Googled to see if there is a dailyrodeo.com. There's not. Thankfully.
You got to buy it and redirect.
Yeah, I know. We do. We should. Now that, you know, that's the added cost of sponsoring the TakeCast is that you then have to buy other URLs.
Mostly proud sponsor of a yeah. Mostly sports podcast.
I do like the way that is written, and I had nothing to do with that. But I do.
Now, by the way, I also had nothing to do with it.
I like the mostly proud sponsor, mostly sport. I mean, this was not even a mostly sports podcast. This was.
Did we get? We talked a little bit about DFS. I had a question about.
We didn't talk about late swap.
I don't want to. I think this product is much better not talking about anything like that.
It probably.
I made that executive decision.
It probably is. But yeah, if you want another ad for dailyrodeo.com, we've got a free trial running during the preseason where you can check out our optimizer and our projections and see what the product's like if you'd like it, if you'd like to join us for this season.
There we go. Everyone, check out Drew on Twitter, check out the Welly Maker, and check out dailyrodeo.com.